a Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, in another new location, joined once again by Anthony Torgrude.
I don't think anyone's noticed your location, but he's moved once again. I'm here, as always, and we got Maddie and John.
Yeah, to be fair, what's I noticed Oliver's location because he's out of his dungeon. But yeah,
it looks just like a brand new dungeon.
Yeah, it's pretty dark around me. It's ominous. There's like files, and then there's presents, so that's a bit brighter.
I'm curious why you have a light fixture in the center of the room that doesn't have lights, and then a lamp on the wall.
No, I wasn't in charge of the interior design for this particular room. But I like it. It's moody, isn't it? Anyway, speaking of moody, let's get straight into it. We got two games to recap, no games to preview because we've got an international break coming up. So, you know, a bit of respite in that sense after what's been a pretty manic fixture schedule. And two games to recap. A good one that we've just seen and a bad one on Thursday. Seems to have been a theme, one good game, one bad game when we're doing recaps. So we'll start with the one that came on Thursday night. We got knocked out of the Europa League by Man United. It was a goal by Paul Pogba just after half-time. Same story as the first leg, really, in that we dominated possession. We were the better side from a footballing point of view. Had some nice passing combinations. We looked dangerous without really testing Dean Henderson too much. And a bit of defensive lapse just after the break cost us. And this time, despite Zlatan playing 30 minutes, we didn't have enough to hit back. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. It's a few days ago now, so my anger's kind of died a bit. But, I feel like it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I'm absolutely annoyed. Like, I'm just... Honestly, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm still annoyed. I'm pissed off. We should have won. We did enough to win between the two legs, but it is what it is. Oh, well.
Yeah, I'm annoyed in the fashion that we lost. But with the injuries that we have, it's almost... better off to be in one competition than fighting for two starting 11s in two different competitions, you know? I think that it's good for a young team to have this feeling, though, to be playing so good at the beginning of the year and then kind of die down a little bit because now that they know that it's a full season and not just till the winter, you know?
I'm hell of annoyed by it. I'm not going to lie. I've got like a burning rage inside. We missed so many opportunities to really kill the game off. I know we had quite a few key players missing, but it's not really an excuse when you have that many opportunities to win a match. We were the better team over two legs, but being the better team gets you absolutely nothing, and you've got to take your chances, and we just didn't. And it was a game for the second leg, especially, were a chance for the so-called big players in the squad to step up, and none of them did.
Yeah, I'm the same. I was burning with rage. Normally when we've lost a game, especially a close one where we've played well, can sort of take the merits out of the performance by the next morning. Still a little bit upset, but it's kind of passed. That initial rage has passed. The more I think about this game, the more that it winds me up, because United, I don't think we'll ever get the chance to play United over two legs and they play as bad as that. You know, they were really there for the taking and we messed it up ultimately. We did the hard yards in the first leg by getting that away goal really late. That knocked the stuffing out of United. You can tell that they were a bit scared of us in the second leg as well. They give us a lot of respect. You know, they let us pass the ball around. We dominated possession. We forged openings, again, a lot of shots from around the edge of the box. On another day, they might go in. But it's just frustrating because the mentality of the fan base, and I respect this because for once they're being overly positive rather than negative for the sake of it. But there's so many fans after the game on social media who took it as an opportunity to praise the performance and say, that's how far we've come. We can compete with Man United over two legs. Well, if you look back at the history of this club, competing generally isn't good enough. Need to beat these teams, especially when they're playing like that. Yes, I agree. We had a lot of injury problems, which made the situation a lot harder to deal with. But first half of the season, we had plenty of injuries. You know, it's not like this is a new occurrence. And we found a way to beat teams. You know, we put teams away. You know, we beat Inter in that. We beat Lazio. Office. There were some big performances in big games when we had key players missing. We found a way to get the job done. 2021 so far, it hasn't felt that way. We've had injury problems and we've still played well in games, but we're lacking that ruthless touch. I understand those people who say, yeah, you know, we played well over 180 minutes. We probably deserve to go through, but nobody remembers that. Nobody remembers the games that were almost, but not quite. They remember the games, you know, where you do the business. You win the tie, you go through, and we didn't do it. So in a year, am I going to remember that two legs against Man United? Probably not for the right reasons. So, yeah, I'm annoyed about it. And I think the players were as well. I think after the game, you could sense the frustration from the players that's like, injuries aren't an excuse. When you're on top in games, you've got to find a way to score. Ibra came on last 30 minutes. He had a header that was straight at Henderson. If he's not as rusty, perhaps that goes in. But it was there. The performances were there over two legs. And yeah, almost but not quite. And it's not.
Yeah, I think that this just, I mean, it even though we lost, it shows our progression because 2 years ago or 3 years ago when we got knocked out by Arsenal, we just got absolutely destroyed, you know. And this team is loads better. It just shows that year over year we are getting better. And it does suck to get kicked out of a competition. But, I mean, you can't win them every time, you know. And so we just haven't played European football in so long, even though it's just the Europa Cup or the Europa League. But I think that we can take some positives from it because we did look good. We did compete and we didn't just get steamrolled by Man United.
I think one of the things that's frustrated me the most is the fact that Ibra's managed to play a full 90 minutes today, but yet we could only have him available for 20-30 minutes on Thursday. And I get it's all about managing a player's injury and his workload, but I just don't believe that it was only available. He couldn't have started from the thing. I put it from the start against Man United, I put it in the group chat. Like, you take the game to Man United, you don't chase it, and that was the perfect game for Ibra to start, grab a couple of goals, because we created enough in the first half, I thought, yeah. And then you bring him on, and you're managing better. You don't bring on a player that's just come back from a 2-3 week absence and playing for 20 minutes to chase a game. And then the other bits that wound me up, and it's still with the medical department, is how we've tried all week to get Calabria, Rebic, Leao and Romagnoli fit, and not one of them could do 45 minutes. Between Rebic and Leao more so, like, Leao, I understand, had a bit of a knock, but Rebic were fine after the Napoli game when he got sent off, so I don't understand how we couldn't recover one of them two for 45 minutes and just do 45 minutes with them, 45 minutes with Ibra, and I think we'd have stood a better chance. So the medical department, I think, have got a lot to answer for now, because it is, that is potentially, that realistically cost us.
How have we done even if...
I don't know about what happened to Rebic, but I think Zlatan should have started, even if it's only for 30 minutes. I mean, we saw it today. He scored after 9 minutes, and we've seen it. You know, we're like almost 40 games deep this season in all comps now, and it's fact. We are strongest in the opening stanza. That's where Zlatan gets all his braces. That's when we always get goals. I mean, we get early goals a lot this season. That's what we should have done, because we knew that, you know, we have injury problems, but so does United. We knew that their weakest lineup was going to be what started. That's when we should have fielded what we had. But if Zlatan could only play the first 30 minutes, so be it. You know, he probably would have toughed out 45 for us and came off at halftime, because that's the type of person he is. And that would have been fine. At least then we could have potentially had a lead. And then when they bring on their €1 million or €100 million player in Pogba at halftime, he gets that one and it's not as big of a deal. You know, we might be able to push forward more, but I don't know. I thought Pioli got it wrong in that game.
That's,
there were other substitutions that I didn't like either. Good.
That's been against me, because with Ibra, when he had 30 minutes to go, say for example he'd have scored, he'd have had to do another 30 minutes in extra time.
That's,
so he clearly had an hour in his legs at least. If you bring him on with 30 to go, knowing that if it goes to extra time, he's got another 30, because you won't make a sub in extra time and bring him off when we're chasing a game. So he should have started for the minimum first 45 and try and grab a goal, try and grab two. If not, keep on for that extra 15, just push him to his limit and then bring him off. And then the other substitution that should have happened was, the other sub that should have happened really was Delort should have come on at half-time for Kalulu, the second Pogba. Well, not half-time, 2 minutes into the game, the second Pogba was on Kalulu, one of the shortest guys on the pitch. He's not going to match him. I'm not saying Delort would have done much better, but it's still a bit more of a physical presence on him. So that's my only criticism, really, of Pirlo, and that's, and I haven't really been that critical of him all season.
Yeah, the medical department thing was mental, because there was, on the eve of the game, as you said, the four names you mentioned were all touch and go whether they were going to start the game, let alone feature in it.
And then Calabria gets an operation.
I was going to say, now we're in a situation where Romagnoli is out with a muscle problem, so he's got worse. Calabria's had knee surgery, so he's worse. Rebic has got a hip problem. I know he was suspended today, but he hasn't travelled with the team, and he's gone straight to Croatia to join up with a national team. So clearly not injured enough to be ruled out of the international break. And then Leao, nobody seems to know what's really up with him. It's some nondescript muscle problem again, like the one that kept him out a month last time. So I don't know. That was really confusing, and fingers need to be pointed. I don't know if the medical staff are thinking, we can't cope with this. You know, players are coming in from the training ground and they've never seen anything like it, but got to find a way to adapt, because it's getting ridiculous now. Just as it looks like we're going to have a clean bill of health, you're looking at seven or eight names on the injury list again. And it's pretty much always muscle problems or problems that are, that come from repetition, I guess. So like the Calabria one was a knee on knee impact, apparently. That happened in the first United game. And I think he's tried to train it off, but in doing so, he's done more damage. So now needs keyhole knee surgery, which he's had, and touch wood, it all went well. So he'll be back in a month. But yeah, just serious. Like, it's very rare that a medical department gets called out at a club. You know, you always trust them to do the best. You always trust them to do their job, act in the best interests of players, work cohesively with the first team coaching staff. But I'm just seeing more and more cries on social media for some accountability in terms of what's going on, because we're up there. We're in the top three in Serie A in terms of injured players this year. And it's, I put in a tweet, I mean, it looks worse in hindsight because we've won today, but injuries have completely sapped any potential out of this season, really. We were leading Serie A for over 20 rounds. There's only so much you can do with the amount of injuries that we had. So I understand that slipped away. Inter have only got one competition to focus on, and that's benefited them without a doubt. Europa League exit at the last 16 stage. So again, nobody's going to really remember that. And a Coppa Italia derby defeat to Inter. So at risk of what was going to be a very, very memorable season to look back on, slipping into absolute obscurity, especially if we hadn't had one today and the pressure would have been piling on. Imagine if we lose that today against Fiorentina. 2 weeks of the headlines just being about how, you know, we've fallen away completely. That's why it was massive to win today.
It's unfair to criticise Pirlo, no, because he genuinely can't help with his injuries. If you take, say for example, you take Barella and Lukaku out of Inter, which is basically what's happened to us in Benancer and Ibra, they're not first. You take, I don't know, Juve's best centre midfielder is, because they've all been a bit shite this year.
Weston McKennie.
But you take one of them and Ronaldo out, they're not third. Yeah, to be fair, he's probably been one of the best ones for Juve. You take them out, they're probably not even third. No manager. Well, debatable. It's a bit like Pulisic all over. But yeah, you take them out, and I just don't see them doing as well as they have done.
That's right. You yank the core out of any team, that is exactly what happens. And I don't blame him entirely. Obviously, you can't blame purely entirely. You just wonder. I wonder how much of a sore point it is at Milanello. I wonder how much of a frustration it is. It must be frustrating for the players as well to have been part of such a, you know, a well-oiled machine that was geared in one direction, and that was going for the Scudetto, for it all to fall away. Not all to fall away because we're 6 points off, whatever, but for it to slip away a little bit because of things that are in theory out of their control, it must be a real downer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, some of it's in their control. I mean, they still determine the results. Like, no one's on this team that's not good enough to be a professional player, you know? Like, yeah, Ballo's pretty shit, and so is Krunic most of the time, but, like, they still have a spot in the team. Like, they still have a job to do, and I don't know. I mean, I'm torn on that. Like, obviously the injuries are huge. Like you said, you took the core out. You took the best players away from us. But the point of a backup is to be able to fit that slot when your best player is out. It just so happens that all of our backups are playing, and some of them are the backups. So I don't know. I mean, yes and no, I guess. It is our fault, but also not.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose another thing with it is that if you look at it fits as a narrative when you look at the overall of the season. So you say we were going well for the first half of the season, and then when the injuries picked up again, we couldn't cope. But when you're looking at it in terms of a micro scale, so you look at that Man United second leg, yes, we didn't have those players back, but I don't view that as a big excuse for why we didn't go through, because we coped well from a performance point of view without the injuries. We played well, we dominated. We should have won that game or won that tie and gone through. The injuries are just a convenient excuse for people who don't want to admit that we weren't ruthless enough and we didn't put a team to the sword that was there for the taking. We need to develop that ruthless streak, because, and I know this seems negative, but I'm getting a bit sick of us losing the 6 points now. You know, we lost to Atalanta at home earlier this year. We lost to Inter in the derby. We lost to Juve at home. We lost to Napoli at home, and that was pretty damaging at the time. We've now been knocked out of the Europa League to United, when a win would have sent a real statement. We lost the Coppa Italia derby, and look what that did to Inter. We're losing all the big games, and that should be a worry. It shows that psychologically, I don't think we've taken that next step yet, and that is to grind out game. You know, if you play well and you win, fantastic. If you don't play well and you lose, you got outplayed. But we need to find a way where we're competing with teams, we're playing well. Okay, if we can't win it, then make sure we don't lose it, you know? And we don't seem to have got that yet. Our home form in 2021 is shocking. And, you know, I think that shows that we've got another gear to go up, which is good, because otherwise we'd be literally perfect. But I think it shows we aren't quite there yet. We're not a finished product. Perhaps that's where the youth comes in. Perhaps that's where we need just that little bit more experience. But yeah, it was a bit of a downer was Thursday night. I mean, the goal, I will mention the goal, really sloppy one to concede. I would imagine Pioli was fuming with that, because we had so many opportunities to kick the ball out, just get it clear. You know, it ricocheted around the box. And then even when Mete is basically pinned in his own 6-yard box, tries to be clever and blast it past Fred, I think it was, and just hits it straight at him. Fred recovers the ball, Pogba scores. Mete should just understand that there's a dangerous situation in front of him there and just put it out behind him for a corner. You take another corner, you reset, you get the set piece, you have your organisation back. Didn't happen. He came out and admitted after the game it was a mistake. So that's fair enough. But those are the moments that win and lose you ties. And, you know, yes, they had the luxury of bringing 100 million midfielder off the bench. We brought Zlatan off the bench. You know, he's not 100 million market value player, but he's just as decisive. So it's just the way it goes. I know they took Rashford off after 45 minutes, but yeah, I don't know.
If you combine all his transfer fees, he's probably more than Pogba. I don't know if that's a fact or not. I'm just guessing, because he's had so many clubs.
I think that's right.
But yeah, as far as the Mata mistake goes, it's frustrating, because you should never be focusing on hold-up play in your own 6-yard box. Like, that's, I mean, youth-level knowledge. Like, why would you ever do that? Just kick it out and take the corner, if anything. Like, worst-case scenario should be you concede a corner, not you give them the ball at point-blank to shoot near post. But he did, and it's frustrating, because when we signed Mata, no one was happy. And then he started getting better and better, and we're like, all right, cool, now this 8 million option is looking like a bargain. And then he does that, and you're like, oh yeah, that's why it's 8 million and not more, because he's an 8 million euro player. Like, we need something more, and I don't know.
I think he was good over the two legs.
I think he was too. That's a decisive error, and regardless of how good you were the rest of the game, that's the most important part of the game, is where you fucked it up. Yep, exactly. So that hurts his value.
I won't put 100% of the blame on Mete there, because there was a chance before to clear it. And it, from where we're looking at it, it looks easy. Yeah, just put the ball out for a corner. But when you're in that game situation, you've got all them players around you, it's not just as simple as tapping it out. And he should have done a lot better, but I also think Kessie could have helped and Hakan could have helped a bit more there. And I know Maddie's going to start slamming Donnarumma in the next 10 seconds for it.
Go on.
I think that he taps it out and we go, what the fuck are you doing? Kick it the other way. So I think it's like a double-edged sword. I mean, if he would have kicked it out, they may have not scored, but then we would have criticized him for kicking the ball out of bounds and giving him a corner. He could have cleared the ball.
I don't care.
Yeah, but then if he scores from the corner, you're still going to blame him for just tapping it out of play. Like, it is a double-edged sword there. And
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
There was more that could have been done.
Like, hindsight's 20/20. But at the same time,
I also think that Donnarumma could have been placed better, closer to his near post, because he was pretty far off his post. And
but it ricocheted quite a bit, and that's got you bouncing everywhere, and I don't know.
I haven't looked back on that.
Yeah, I don't think Donnarumma did anything wrong. I mean, maybe he could have been positioned better just because it was near post, so by nature of that, like, you could be blocking it a little bit better, but
I'm not a goalie, but getting scored on near post is, like, the most embarrassing thing that can happen. You know?
They're, like, four yards out.
Exactly.
I don't care if it's 40 yards out or 5 yards out. You get scored on near post.
I do.
He did have his vision blocker as well.
Yeah, like, 4 or 5 yards out, Pogba fakes it, Donnarumma takes a little step, and then he just blasts it into the roof of the net. It wasn't even, like, one of them where it's crept in the near post. It's a hard shot to save from that far out with that much power. Yeah, it's...
There was a body between them as well. Like, Donnarumma did have his vision obscured slightly. I can't find a way to blame him for that goal. The one thing I will say is perhaps in the build-up to when there was the ricochet that was happening right on the edge of the six-yard box, can he potentially take charge and just dive on the ball, try and dive on the ball to cut out the danger and draw foul if he doesn't get to it? Because you know what they're like, overprotecting keepers. Just put yourself in the way and make sure. But I think clutching at straws a little bit there. There were chances to clear. Ricochet situation, you don't know what's going to happen. The last thing that you really want it to do is fall to a player with the technical ability of Pogba. But that's it.
The worst part is he was silent most of the game. Like, that was his one thing, you know?
Yeah, it was, to be fair. He's good, though. I mean, he had that thing where he held it up towards the end of the game and he drew a foul. And I just thought, he's so clever, like, how he uses his sight. I just think if you add Pogba, and assuming he's fit most of the time, if you add him to our team and you have him in that double pivot, he elevates the team, don't get me wrong, for all his criticism and stuff. I was impressed with how we kept Bruno quiet again, I will say that. Yeah. We also kept Rashford very, very quiet until he went off with the ankle problem again. The one player we did allow space to was Dan James again, but that's not a problem because he has the technical ability of Castillejo, so that was fine. Or Castillejo, because... No, wait, he is Spanish, so I can say Castillejo. Don't beef at me, Isaac. And yeah, that's it. We're out of the Europa League. I mean, I said when the tie came out that I thought it was a perfect draw for two reasons. One, if we go through, it's a massive confidence boost. It shows that we're ready for a return to Champions League because we're playing a Champions League level opponent. But the second reason is if we go out, then it's okay because we can focus on the league now for the last 11 games, 10 games, whatever it is. 11 in it. Yeah, 10 now. So that's a bonus, and also it saves us going all the way to the end and potentially losing a heartbreaking final to United, which we could have done.
I'd much rather lose a final than a quarter final, though.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I'd rather lose a final than a quarter final.
No way, no way. No. Final's heartbreaking, man.
Yeah, but getting to the final is a lot better than not. Like, this campaign, the Lions have never won a Super Bowl.
We've also never been in a Super Bowl, so
yeah, no.
I'd rather lose a Super Bowl than never get to it.
When you've witnessed Istanbul at the age of 10, like, nothing gets more heartbreaking than that. Like,
we would have lost in that fashion, but, like, still, at least we got there. You know, I think for this Milan team, Coppa Italia getting to a final.
Yeah, I was just about to go for that next one. Coppa Italia when we lost 1-0 to Juve. Morata,
that was tough.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about my emotions because my emotions don't mean shit. I'm thinking like make it to the final, get as much prize money as we possibly can for this club that needs money.
Yes.
You look now, like you said, hindsight 2020, and you see the draw that Man United have just been given. Like they've got Girona, and then they've got either Roma or Ajax in the semi-finals, and then you look at the rest of the competition; everyone's beatable.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, United's winning this competition now, so that's like our little silver lining. Like at least we went out to the guys who are eventually going to win it. But at the same time, like put us in there, and then we are clear favorites. Clear favorites. So it's heartbreak all around.
But also, I think beating United would have done so much for this team's morale.
I remember when we drew Arsenal 3 years ago, how hyped this team was because they're like, wow, this is a real test for us. And Matty, you said we got destroyed. No, the first game was close. We went into that really well. I think we played better the first game. Hakan had that fucking crazy bullet. Yeah, it was the second leg where we got shit on. Yeah. And
what happened the second leg? Didn't we lose like 3-0 or something?
No, we lost.
No, the second leg.
It was 3-1 or 2-1.
Hakan scored and then Danny Welbeck dived.
But I thought we were the better team over the two legs.
That's what changed the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were the better team. But the thing is as well, like, yes, the prestige was there of drawing Arsenal. But you remember rightly, Arsenal were 8th or something at the time that we played them.
Yeah, and they're 10th
and they still beat us. So we got laughed at again. And the thing is as well about the final, look how much Inter got shit on for losing the Europa League final last season.
By it's fans, just a bigger stage for you.
Just a bigger stage for you to fall at, though, isn't it? I hate losing finals. No, it's just heartbreaking.
I hate not getting to finals. We can focus.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but if you're going to get to the final to lose it, then what was the point of the entire previous?
Being better than everyone else, bar one team, I guess.
Being better than Granada, Mulder, and
being better than Manchester United, Spurs, Arsenal, Roma, Napoli.
We're better than Spurs.
I mean, given current form, yeah.
Right, so from a defeat against United, as Maddie yawns, to a win over Fiorentina today, that's what's got us in a bit of a perkier mood than we would have been if we recorded straight after Thursday night. This was a really good game. I imagine it was more enjoyable for the neutral than it was for us because obviously our heart was doing flips during this one. But a 5-goal thriller. It seems to be normally when we play at the play away at Fiorentina, they're much tighter games. We won 1-0. The season before last, we drew 1-1 last season. We've drawn 4 of our last 5 games there, in fact. But this one wasn't. It was wide open. It was two teams that wanted to play well. And that was exactly what was said before the game in the press conference. Then you expect that Fiorentina were going to come at us and try and play. And they did. I have to give them credit because I thought actually they were one of the better opponents that we've played this season. And they've got some really talented players. Castrovilla gave Dallow an absolute nightmare. Ribery is, you know, he's still decisive even at his age. And Vlahovic, well, we'll come on to him because he's been linked with us throughout the week. But we got the job done. And that is, I suppose, what matters.
Yeah, here's the thing. Fiorentina sucks. They're not a good team. I think they're one of the worst in Serie A, and somehow they've never gone down, at least recently. But they definitely aren't top quality. But they brought it to us. And like you said, it was a great game from a neutral point of view. We went up, then they went up, then we went up again. So definitely back and forth. Fun game to watch if you're not emotionally invested like we are. But Dallow was a disaster. And Brahim looked poor until Pioli made a very wise decision to switch Hakan out of his natural spot to move him out left and bring Brahim into his natural spot. Because obviously Hakan's a bit more versatile than Brahim. So it made him flow well, and it opened up that left side, especially when Samu came on and our right side was Dallow and Samu, which is, you know, basically being down to 9 men. So, yeah, I was happy with Pioli's ability to adapt. I was happy with our resilience to come back. It was the first league game where we came back from a losing position, so that was nice to see as well. Again, we scored right off the bat, very opening. With Zlatan, it's almost like he should have done that against United, but we're past that already. So, someone else take it away. I'm ranting.
Yeah, I was happy with how the team played. I will say that when Sam came on, I was like, all right, let's see what he does. Watch him bag the winner. And then he got a through ball, and I'm pretty sure that there's no defenders around him. and somehow he managed to fuck that up.
Dude, I'm trying to my mind.
Tried to do some like clever little cutback ball to Zlatan.
He was running in slow motion. Like normally he has at least a little pace. And I was just like, are you not running? Like what the fuck is going on?
He wasn't thinking is what it is. Like every time he has the ball, he should be lobbing it over to Zlatan. Except for this time, he should have took the shot. And it's the one time he gave it to Zlatan, who was nowhere near goal. He was basically a 3-on-1, and he's like,
it was like a defensive clearance the way that he did it. It was fucking weird. He should have known if he wasn't going to win the foot race, he should have just let fly from the edge of the box. And if it was on target, he probably gets at least a corner.
And it's their backup goal.
Well, it wouldn't have been on target. We saw what happens when he shoots. It just goes sky high, so.
He tried playing a through ball to a 39-year-old Zlatan that apparently doesn't have more than 30 minutes in his legs. I just don't understand the logic behind it. Like, are you just trying to get him injured by him entering a foot race? It just made no sense. The positive things that I thought about the game was, we've said it before, we didn't even get out of the gear, and for once we didn't look desperate neither to score. It looked like it was just natural. It was part, in a way, part of the plan. It was just coming and... We're critical of Hakan against Man United, and I'm still going to be critical of him. I think when you're asking for big money, that he's asking for, I know 5 mil doesn't seem a lot, but in our financial situation, it is when you want to become one of the highest paid players, you've got to do something out of nothing in a sense. And that's what he should have done in the Man United game. I know it's not as simple as that, but he stepped up big today, but he can't just do it as a one-off. It's got to be consistent now for the next 10 games if he wants that renewal.
The irony of that too, the Hakan goal, and I put this in the chat, that was a terrible pass from Kessier. It was behind him.
Yeah,
the only reason he shot it right away was because it was behind him. That was his only option. It just happened to go in. But if that ball was where it should have been in front of him, then he probably takes it to the byline and tries to cross it over and misses someone, and then it's nothing. So, I mean, like you said, something out of nothing, it obviously is better than what could have happened, but it's just it's interesting that Kessié's only misfortune in like the entire season was that bad pass, and it just happened to work out for the better.
That's what it is when you are asking for the big money. That is what you've got to do. You have just got to create something. And I think for the last part of this season now, Hakan, Ibra, Donnarumma, in a way they are playing for the futures. I know it's hard to say about Donnarumma, but lately he hasn't been up to what he's asking for. He's asking to be the world's highest paid goalkeeper, and shit like that free kick, the first goal in Manchester, the one against Udinese, that's what you're getting 10 million for. And if you can't save them, then you don't deserve it. So in a way, he's playing for his future. If you're going in with big demands, you've got to back it up with big performances.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially with the
free kick. He's also 21 or 20, so...
Then don't ask for 10 million a year.
22.
What child deserves that?
22.
I don't care what your ability is.
If he's 21 at least.
If you're earning 10 million a year, there's not a free kick on earth that you shouldn't save. Point and simple.
I totally agree. Without any Champions League experience.
What about a goal from 4 or 5 yards out?
Those are different. Those are point blank. It's either you're there or you're not.
Yeah, but he's 21 years old, so.
Yeah, he's 21 years old. He's got to let him off. He's got to make mistakes, right?
He's literally... At the age of 16, he was taller than 99% of the world's population. Like, he's always been an adult, really, as Gigio, to be honest. And
height doesn't make you an adult. Look at you. You're tall as shit and act like you're...
I mean, in frame. I mean, I'm 2 years older than Gigio, which is really bad. He's always been tall in frame and stuff, so it's not like he's magically... And he needs to figure out how to start saving shots again. He's always been a good shot stopper. But yeah, the thing about the 10 million deal as well is he's 22 years old and he signed a 10 million a year deal that perhaps is a 5-year extension, let's say. So 4 years down the line, or 3 years, we're going to have to renegotiate that. And do you think he's going to renew at the same figure? No, he's going to want to go up again. So then,
especially if he's got Raiola. To be the highest paid keeper in the world without any Champions League experience, but you concede him free kicks like that, the goal against Udinese, you just can't do it, I'm afraid.
I don't know
in his defense, and getting back to Fiorentina, he made a very, very wise play at the end of the game there to keep the ball in and prevent a corner. Because he went out of bounds and hit it down and then dove back in to grab it. And that is a 10 million euro decision. Granted, there's other shit that goes into that, and he didn't do all of it, but that play says, like, okay, yeah, you are worth a lot of money. It just needs more.
I think it were a good decision, but I think that's also one of the basics of being a goalkeeper, not letting the ball
probably go out of play. Is. Yeah.
Like, yeah, but when you have reflex. What I'm saying is he had Tomori right in front of him. Like, he had to go over his player, go out of bounds to do it. Like, there was a lot more skill to it than just like, oh, let's not let a corner, you know?
One thing I will say about the free kick is it was a fantastic free kick.
It was,
like,
but
it wasn't an absolute howler. Like, it wasn't a Udinese level mistake. You know what I mean? Like, he put it postage stamp. But one thing I will question is the positioning of the wall, because he was only ever going to score directly by hitting it near post top corner. So why not just make sure the wall's covering that near post, and then you let Gigio stand closer towards the middle of the goal for if he needs to claim a cross, and that way you covered either way. The way that
Andy got a hand to it, it's just
I
was gonna say, to be fair, he did get a strong hand, but his wrist is clearly not that strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that.
You can't
a $10 million goal again.
No, I mean, he should stop it because he should be in a better position. But once he was in that position, you can't just go. It's not basketball where you just sling it back in the other direction. The momentum, it was always going in, even though he only got his hand to it. But yeah,
it was a perfect free kick. But the fact that he got such a big hand to it, it wasn't like a fingertip, it was his full palm, like the full hand that he got to it. So, to not for that not to be stronger, that's where the criticism comes in. If it had just gone in, you just hold your hands up and be like, good free kick, but he got that much contact to it, he should have done better.
So Antonio's saying
the other thing is it's a free kick. You know the ball's coming right at you. You know where it's coming from. There's only so many things you could do on a free kick, either over the wall, under the wall, or around it, but it's going towards you. So I don't know. If you're trying to earn $10 million a year, goalkeeper, you got to save every single free kick. I don't care how good it is, top right corner. When you're 6'9", however tall he is, you can save fucking anything. You know?
I think it's just one of them, like you said, where he should really be saving it. And it's hard to make an excuse for him, but Dallo shouldn't have committed that foul. That's where it came from. So that's, you can put some criticism there. But I think there was a bit of confusion. Because I don't think when Gigio set the wall up, I think he set it up as an indirect free kick. And that's what he was complaining at when the ball went in and he had to make the save. He kind of like scurried across and got a hand to it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because
Is that what he was bitching about?
But I just don't understand why he thinks it's an indirect free kick when it's just a foul from.
I still don't know the rules myself on free direct and indirect free kicks in terms of how they're awarded and how they're signaled and stuff. It's bizarre, but yeah, he kicked off big time, didn't he? He went running out, and I thought, was there a Fiorentina player stood in the wall to obscure him? He was in an offside position. That's what I thought at first.
But here's another thing: as a goalkeeper earning $10 million a year, you should know what type of free kick you're up against, regardless.
He's not earning 10 mil yet. We're gonna let him go for free. So
that's the point. That's the point.
Why don't we give Antonio 6 mil a year? That's what I... Please don't think that's serious. People will kick off about that. But apart from that...
Your rating just went down 3 points.
Oh, no. Come on, Lucas, please. Kier got 2 assists, which is kind of mad. The first one was a beauty. Nice little lob ball over the top. I've criticised Ibra so much just in general for the timing of his runs. I know they've got worse because he's 39 and he ain't quite as limber as he once was. But he's been offside a lot this season. But he timed that run absolutely perfectly. He literally had the freedom of Florence just to put it past Drakovsky. And I instantly assumed he was offside. He didn't even really celebrate the goal.
I think
he just sort of hugged Brahim and that was that. And then Kier got ahead of... He's always a threat from corners, have you noticed, Kier? He's hit the crossbar 3 times this season with headers from corners. Not only that, but if he doesn't get it on target, he seems to direct it dangerously towards the far post. And that was where Brahim was on hand to level to make it 2-2. And then the winner, as you've talked about, lovely finish from Calhanoglu, who's now scored in 3 games in a row on Fiorentina's ground. So we perhaps should have seen that coming. But it was a good performance, and the two centre backs for me stood out. Tomori and Kier, again, that's our pairing going forward now, in my opinion. Those two just look immovable. I know we conceded twice today, but I'm not holding either of them at direct fault, especially for the first goal. But then the second goal is second balls. It was poor, actually. It was the second goal. I think we'd perhaps be a lot more angry about it if we hadn't won the game. But to allow Frank Ribery a run-up and shot from inside the box is not ideal by any means. Though I must say, Vlahovic, if he is to become our player in the summer, that was a nice bit of hold-up play from him. So maybe that's something we can look forward to.
I can't remember who was blocking on the Ribery shot, but I remember on the replay, when they showed it from Donnarumma's point of view, it was completely blocked. Like, you couldn't see the ball coming at all.
Also, it was a good finish. First time into the inside side net, and it was a nice finish. I mean, I know he looks like a goblin anyway, Frank Ribery, but I didn't get his celebration, like the zombie stomp thing. It looks like a tit now in hindsight. Never really liked him as a player, to be honest, but I would have taken him when Gattuso apparently wanted him. Anyway, that's it. It was good. Those two centre-backs, good. Dalot, a nightmare. Teo, I'm convinced that he might never make the right decision on the ball again. Teo just keeps doing these runs and not finding the right pass, or he gets the runs cut off really early and the next thing he's got to turn around and defend. He's not quite there. I think physically he's sharp, but mentally I don't think he's in rhythm.
I think he's been taking advice from his girlfriend, who obviously makes poor decisions.
I was just about to say that. Wow. Since he's got Zoe as his girlfriend, he seems to have declined a little bit in his performances. And that's not saying that he hasn't been great for us. But when you see that Real Madrid are willing to pay like 50, 60 million to take him back, you start thinking that could be reinvested very well back in the squad for a lot more certainty and consistency.
Is she a celebrity? Because everyone just refers to her by her first name.
She's
and
a
like,
model.
She's a nothing model. To me.
She's yeah, she's a famous model person. In Italy.
Yeah, I've never seen her before until he started to date her.
Yeah, she's like, I'm so confused. Everyone's like, oh. It's... Oh.
Okay. Pictures kind of went around. Around
yeah, everyone's just like, yeah, Zoe. I'm like, who's Zoe? Are we friends with her? Like, who is this lady?
Zoe 101. Okay.
Well, that makes more sense. Great show, by the way.
Yeah, it was really good. Interesting point that, and we didn't get asked a question about it, but it is an interesting talking point, and I think it's one of them that's going to become more and more divisive. 60 million quid, euros, 50, 60 million, is a lot of money for a fullback. You know, it's the most expensive that a fullback will have ever been. You know, you look at João Cancelo,
basically, I thought he went for 60.
Whoever Man City have signed,
they've signed. I thought Cancelo went for 60.
Yeah. Kyle Walker went for 50, I believe.
Yeah. So he's in the bracket of most expensive fullbacks of all time.
And rightfully so.
And that is a lot of money. And I just think, obviously, half of Europe's going crazy for this Nuno Mendes at Sporting. All I hear, I don't watch Sporting Lisbon, but all I hear is that he is the real deal and he's really good. And Sporting are in a financial mess. So we get 60 million for Teo. Use 30. He's got a release clause of 70 million as this Nuno Mendes. So maybe you can negotiate a 25, 30 mil deal and you've got some nice money to spend on a winger. It's when you start looking at it as like 2-for-1 player business that you think, you know, like Benacer. I mean, he's great. He's very important to us. And I thought he was bright when he came off the bench today. And it was great to see him back out there on the pitch. But 50 million euros is a lot of money for a player that will have played half the season.
Yeah, you know? I would have liked Benacer to have not come on today. I think we were doing enough to kind of put the game away without bringing him on and just risk hurting him again. I mean, he did get hit and was down for a little bit. And I thought, here we go again. You know, he's out the rest of the season now. So I would have liked him to just get a little bit more rest just because when he did come back last time, he was immediately out again. Like, those are the players you got to stop risking. And I understand earlier in the podcast, I said, throw Zlatan on the first 30 minutes. I don't care how long he lasts, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know. But
he's getting 7 million net a year and he's 39. Exactly. So he's kind of spent anyway. I'm at the point now with Zlatan when I'm like, if we're in a decisive situation, forget the whole what about Zlatan's health. This ain't a long-term thing. We need to milk Zlatan for what he's got, ultimately.
I agree.
If you'll pardon the pun. And we got the 90 minutes out of him today. And Benacer, Pioli said after the game, he has been called up for the Algeria squad, but there's been a pre-agreement that he will only feature in one of the two games. So that's okay. That's more match rhythm for him. And it's like it's just like a regular week then. He'll play on the weekend and then he'll be back with us. So I'm okay with that. And then as for the others, I mean, Zlatan going to have to manage his workload. And then you've got Rebic, who will be going with Croatia. I think Leao has... Portugal under-21s are hoping to have Leao, and Dalot's been called up. So, yeah, we've got players going all over. It's a shame because people think, coaches keep saying about the international break being a big relief. I think they mean more from a mental freshness point of view because they have 2 weeks without a game so they can properly prepare for what's coming up after the break. But we'll have 15 players leaving on international duty. So there'll only be a few players left at Milanello to train and to prepare for games and that kind of thing. And a lot of them will come back 2 or 3 days before our next game. So they'll have limited training. So it isn't really the relief that people think it is. If anything, it makes things very complicated. I mean, what if one of them came back with COVID or whatever? You know, then.
I mean, luckily we play Sampdoria. They've lost 13 times this season. So, I mean.
Luckily, most of the teams also had COVID. So we have our antibodies.
That's actually a really good point, Maddie. I mean, everyone's already had it. They're all good to go.
That's true, yeah. That's it. And that's the thing as well. There's no such thing about as a lucky outbreak, not when it comes to people's actual literal health. But instead of having
there is when outbreak, it fucking comes to them. Sorry, but yeah, it's just lucky.
It come at the perfect time because now none of those players are going on international duty. They get 2 weeks of rest. The best we can hope for is that they're knocked completely out of rhythm and they're not really back firing for a while. And that Sassuolo game's now been moved to a midweek, so they'll have more congested fixtures towards that period of the season. But that's it. I mean, it's come at the right time for them.
It wouldn't surprise me if Conte has been telling them just to lick each other, cough on each other, just to get it. Like it's just
donkeys have big tongues as well. So Lukaku could get through like 5 at once.
Well, so, yeah. I can't end this. I've got a question. What do we
Thank
have?
Thank you for watching. Question time. From Gio, keep up the great work, guys. Thank you. Am I going crazy or is Tomori the best young defender in Serie A? He hasn't been playing much at Chelsea and he's still shaking off the cobwebs. You guys might say Matthias De Ligt, but he spends more time on the medical table than the pitch.
No, I don't say Matthias De Ligt. I say Tomori, hands down, easy.
No, Matthias De Ligt's still probably...
Current form, Tomori's probably the best. But in the league, you've got players like Bastoni, De Ligt, Demiral of Juve, they are all top quality young centre-backs too, to be fair.
I like... obviously, like there's a few that are not quite at that same level as the names that you mentioned, but guys like Ibanez, who's been really good for Roma, Mattia Lovato, who keeps getting thrown about, Milenkovic, who's only 22. People forget that.
Gabia.
Yeah, Gabia. I mean, you might as well throw him in there.
Gabia's not better than Tomori, though, or else he'd be starting over Tomori.
No, he's not.
No, just in terms of they're up there, top youngsters are up there.
Yeah. I think, yes, the answer to the question is he is one of the best young defenders in the league. I think it is that simple.
Out of all the names we mentioned, the only ones I would take would probably be Milinkovic and Demiral. I'm happy with Tomori Kjær over all the others.
Demiral's another one who spends more time on the treatment table than anything. Luis Felipe is another one. He's been really good at Lazio the last couple of seasons, and he's only 23, which you forget about because he plays like he's 30. But there's plenty that are in the discussion, but might not be quite at that level yet. I think Tomori's looking more and more like a no-brainer with every week that goes on. That 28 million looks like more and more of a bargain. And there comes a time when even Elliot, as frugal as they've been, have got to be like, this is a good business investment. Because, best case scenario, give it 2 years, club's finances are looking brilliant, healthy, everything. We're an established Champions League club. If anything, we're building around players like Tomori and adding players like that. Worst thing is he's still mint in 2 years and we get to sell him back to England for 60 to 70 million and it's been a fantastic business decision. So it becomes a no-brainer. It becomes an economic decision more so than a look how good he is on the pitch. Michael Golisano, another month ticks away and still no renewal for number 99 and number 10. Should we start getting nervous?
It's getting down to the wire, but no. I think they'll get renewed. I don't think they're getting 10 and 7. I think it'll probably be like 7 and 5, but it'll get done.
I think we're the renewal thing, we seem to do the renewal stuff on the wraps, which I like. I mean, there's meetings and stuff that you hear about, but I think there is something whereby, because there has been meetings with the agents, and I refuse to believe that in these meetings they sit around for an hour and just say, well, what about this number? What about this number? There must be some actual progress. I think what's happened is we've got contracts pre-agreed. We've basically got verbal agreements over the terms of new contracts that will be pen to paper the moment that we sign for moment that we qualify for the Champions League, because that instantly nets us
yeah.
60 million in budget or whatever. And if we don't get in the Champions League, we might have to renegotiate. I did see a report, and this doesn't seem make sense at first, but I saw a report that basically said if we don't qualify for the Champions League, we might have to pay Donnarumma more to stay, basically out of loyalty, you know, because otherwise he'll just take him to a Champions League club. And it does sound backwards to us as Milan fans, but I get it at the same time.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's kind of like paying him to play for a non-Champions League team, you know.
Yeah, it's a luxury bonus or whatever you might call it.
But also, we could qualify for Champions League and he could be utter shit against top teams.
Could be. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we really haven't seen him play against
Champions League
sets. Bayern, PSG.
That's where my point comes in. When you're asking for 10 million and you haven't even played in the Champions League, you better be keeping clean sheets against every bottom tier Serie A side to make up for when you do concede a couple of goals in the Champions League. That's where that I see it. And I know it's like a bit of a backwards way of looking at it, but without the Champions League experience, and you see players like Neuer, who's been at the top of his game for years, Oblak, who is now at the top of his game, De Gea, who's been. And they're not even earning that. I just don't see where Donnarumma has the right to be asking for that kind of money without playing a single minute Champions League football yet.
And that's really not earning that kind of money.
It's just something I read on Twitter that if he gets 10 million a year, he'll be the highest paid goalkeeper.
Yeah. I think that's right. And also, I guess the assumption is that the deal comes before what happens next. So he would agree the 10 million a year deal, knowing that next season he's going to get Champions League minutes. So I suppose it clicks into place like that. But then, I don't know, I just think of the Champions League and I think of some of the goalkeepers and I think Oblak, absolutely elite, don't get me wrong. But then you look at some of those keepers who have been slated and have been almost laughed at, like Sir Keylor Navas, for example, who's been shipped from pillar to post. And he's just amazing. Every time I see him, I think he's incredible. And like even Dortmund's keeper, Roman Bürki, he slips under the radar. Again, fantastic.
So just to go back to the wage thing, yes, 10 million would be the most as of right now. But this article from Bild as of a couple of days ago says Neuer's in talks right now for 20 million a season for a 5-year deal.
About 45.
Yeah, he's up there. So
that's not whatever he wants.
But then that'd make him the second highest paid player. And
this isn't a few days ago. This is last year. I'm sorry. I forgot we're in 2021. So this is bullshit. Okay. He's on 5 mil right now.
Manuel Neuer's on 5 mil.
No, sorry. Neuer's on 7 mil. Ter Stegen's on 5.
Ter Stegen's elite, you see.
Yeah.
It's just one of them. It's no disrespect to Donnarumma because I think he is brilliant, and you could argue he's generational, but I just think you've just got to see him in the Champions League first before you make them kind of statements. It's one thing making a save like you did against Milik, it's a fantastic save, but you come up against someone like Haaland, he buries that 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, and it's just them bits.
Haaland isn't even making 10 million a year, and he wins games, you know?
If he's making it 10 times out of 10, how is he going to prove himself to save that and earn 10 million? Just asking.
Wait, I don't understand your question. Repeat.
He said Haaland's going to make that 10 times out of 10. So no goalie is going to save it.
No, he got you there.
That's a fair point.
I'm just saying.
No, yeah. No, but you know what I mean? It depends if he gets beat at his near post or not, and he's only 21, so it's just...
I know what you mean. Like, that kind of money has to be match winners, not match.
Yeah.
So, Ahmed said it best. There's always going to be a ceiling on how effective a goalkeeper can be. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide, is he 10 million a year worth of effectiveness? And I think the answer is that's probably what you're paying a top striker. So you need to think about it. But I think that's you keep him because he's your position sorted. Because you don't have to pay a transfer fee. He's that position sorted for the next 15 years.
But it's also, so, we're almost like paying him to become a club legend. Kind of. And like having that.
He will break all of the records.
I mean, he's got the potential to be. Yeah.
If he stays with us for his career, he will break all of the records, purely because we're playing more games now and he started when he was 17. So there is that in mind. So yeah, I don't know, man. Right. Moving on. Omar, thoughts on Bennacer being the best midfielder in history? He did look good when he came on. He did that thing where he beat a couple of players on the dribble. And I was like, that's what we've been missing. Someone who's... he's not... Don't laugh at this, but he's kind of like a midfield Messi in the sense that he ain't afraid to take the ball around players.
It's last week all over again with the questions and the comments.
We don't have anyone else like that in terms of beating a man on the dribble from midfield. So I think he's important in that sense. And I enjoyed seeing that when he came on. But is he the best midfielder in history? Algerian history, yeah. Probably.
Yeah, I think Omar was making a joke in the question, obviously. But we all agree Bennacer is fantastic. But come on, midfield Messi, shut up.
No, I'm standing by that. That's spot on. We got two questions along. That's going to be the title of the podcast, by the way. Midfield Messi. I'm going to put Bennacer on Messi's thing.
Lucas, you have to give Ollie a zero for that.
No, Lucas, you're getting Bennacer. A
10. Yeah, you're getting Lucas a 10 out of 10 Bennacer. Because of that stupid comment. I'm getting a zero for shitting on it.
Right, we got two similar questions, one from Mayglass, one from Adam. The Vice Ibra thing again. There's been a couple of Belotti's obviously keeps being linked, but there's been a couple of new names come up again. Vlahovic, one of them. First of all, what do you think of him today?
I think he's a great player. I've held that all season. He's definitely at a club well below his level. I don't know if that's like the answer for us, but it's a good next step, you know, after Ibra's gone. But then again, if we're in Champions League for 2 years in a row by the time Ibra retires, if he's supposedly renewing for another year, then at that point we should have the money to go out for a 60, 70 million euro striker like Inter did with Lukaku, you know. They had it three in a row and never got to the group stage. We get out of the group stage once and we're already in a better financial situation than they are, so.
And we're not paying our coach 20 million a year.
Yeah, and we can pay our players on time. Doesn't take us 8 months.
And we're not in Milan, so it's just a win all over.
Right.
I do like Vlahovic, but I think what we need next year is a striker in his prime that is going to win us games. I think we've already got someone like Leao who is young and we can build. And I'm not against going for a young striker, but we need somebody in the prime. And I'll just, not just Belotti, but a Belotti profile that fits the same mold, similar to Ibra, but is in the prime and ready to score goals for us. Not one that, he might score 2-1 week, but then go missing for five. We just need someone that's going to be, try at least be consistent.
On the Leao,
is the most. Back.
The Leao experiment's done. Leao is never going to be a centre-forward for us. He had a run.
No, but I'm just saying, if you're going to have a young player, then just try, stick. You've already got one in Leao who you can kind of attempt to mould a bit more, like with a full pre-season, not just throwing him in a couple of games and expecting him to do what Ibra's done. But I just think you need someone that's ready.
I've made
it
very clear I don't like Belotti, but that's the answer, because Torino's getting relegated. You could pick him up for 5 million. It's a no-brainer. That's what you go for.
Well, depends on how many teams are after him, but yeah.
Yeah, it could be a bidding war. The fact that Inter and Atletico are apparently sniffing around Belotti probably says that there's something there, you know.
Inter don't need him unless they're scared of losing some players.
I was gonna say, think
they're
about
going
it.
They to. They can't pay anyone.
They might have to sell Lukaku, and they might.
They owe United like 40 mil still.
Yeah,
Inter wanted Dzeko in the summer though, didn't they? So they clearly want like a vice Lukaku, someone that can hold up play and stuff like that. I just don't see Belotti going to Inter just to sit on the bench.
And also, he's a Milan fan. I don't think he would go anyway, to be honest.
I mean, Tonali was about to do it. That means nothing.
Well, the media said Tonali was about to do it. We don't know if he
And then as soon
was.
As we came knocking, though, he put everything aside and said he wants to join us. So,
yeah.
Darwin Núñez is the new one. Now, might not see much of him, I haven't, but he's apparently the new hot shot for Benfica. I'm always apprehensive after we got burned by the Andreas Silva thing. I know he's doing well in the Bundesliga, but we got burned by the Andreas Silva thing. But he looks good from what I've seen of him. I spent some time watching him today. He looks really strong. He is a Belotti type, like hold up forward, and a bit like Vlahovic as well. Good with the ball at his feet. The only problem is they spent 25 mil to buy him, so they're probably going to want to sell him for double. So
I just think with Serie A, you need the top goal scorers in Serie A, they're all in the prime, they're all 27 and above. Yeah, you have like Vlahovic who might have a good season this season, like Belotti did when he was young, but then Belotti went missing for a season or two because you're still trying to find your prime. So that's what you need in Serie A. It might work in the Champions League, like Haaland's just scoring for fun, but I think for Serie A, you need an intelligent striker that knows the league, that knows Italian football, and that's the way to go forward. And that's not saying don't sign a young striker, but I think Belotti or a Belotti mold that's a similar age that's in his primes, they should be the goal.
Right.
Wrap it up. Less than a minute.
I will wrap it up. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. We'll do something a bit different next week because it's international break, so nothing to cover, really. I might do a quiz or something. We'll figure it out. Or I might get a guest on. But yeah, thanks for watching. Have I had AJ?
No, we'll catch you in a week's time.
Andrea Conti, bella palla per Rebic. Rebic Ibra. Rebic. 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 Il tiro. Gol!